everyone.
Welcome back, or welcome to this month's episode of Top Marketers. My name is Jordana Rothberg, and today I am so thankful to be joined by the president of Dukas Linden Public Relations, Seth Linden. Seth has been president of the firm since 2014, previously serving as an executive vice president. In his current role, he heads up client communications counsel, client programs, media coaching, crisis management, and so much more for everyone from nonprofits to small organizations, Fortune 500 companies, you name it. Seth, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's my pleasure. So let's just jump in. I would really love to learn more about you and your background and how you got to your current role.
Well, my background actually is, I think, somewhat traditional, more than I realized when I got into the public relations business. I came out of the journalism world. I spent the majority of my career in broadcast journalism. I was a television reporter for about 7 years, covering Capitol Hill primarily for most of that. And I actually think it gave me a strong basis for the public relations field, particularly in financial services, because when you're a reporter on Capitol Hill, you really need to know how to adapt to different audiences quickly. You have to take complex legislation and filter it down and make it understandable to the average layperson. And that training, I think, really helped me for the financial services world in terms of adapting and adopting to different clients quickly, and also taking complex subjects and boiling them down so hopefully most folks can understand those concepts, including myself.
Absolutely makes sense. So you have that background in journalism. What led you to where you are now, working with PR instead?
Well, there were different factors. And I remember I saw this advertisement, it's got to be at least 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And it said, I wasn't born in New York, but I got here as soon as I could. And I really wanted to be in New York City. And I knew that if I stayed in the news business, it might take me a long time to get here. And my wife and I did not have children yet, but I knew we were eventually, hopefully, and we did, we were starting a family. And I felt that the longer I didn't get to New York, the harder it would be. And I felt that I wanted to be in New York and I wanted to be a business person. But the other part from the career standpoint is I felt at times that I wanted to be on that other side of the camera. I would interview a member of Congress and I'd think to myself, boy, I think I could help that person say that better than they're saying it to me. So it was sort of, it was in my mind, this idea floating of messaging and communication. And over time, it just sort of clicked. And I knew nothing about financial services, but it seemed appealing to me because it was deadline oriented. It involved, again, explaining difficult concepts and making those more simple. I love the structure of the markets. And so over time, it just sort of evolved, wanting to be in New York, wanting to be in business, and wanting more of a career trajectory. And I feel very blessed that I made that switch.
Sure. So working on Capitol Hill taught you some of these skills. And now you're in the process of joining a PR firm. You want to be in New York. You and your wife want to be here. How do you get here?
Well, it took a while. And when I started applying for positions, you know, I would talk to people who were press secretaries or had worked on Capitol Hill or were working at trade associations, and they gave me their advice. But I needed somebody to take a chance on me. And I was applying for positions, and there was actually skepticism about a journalist going into PR. It might seem counterintuitive because you would think a journalist would know how to reach other journalists as a PR professional. Right. But I think there was concern about, well, will you understand the nuances of running a client relationship? Will you know how to work in business? And I just needed a break. And it took a while. But then I found the right fit with our current firm, and the rest is history. It just, I needed that first break. And for anybody who might be listening who's thinking about this, I know that we're going to talk about other topics, but you just need that first break in this field. And then if you work hard and you meet good people along the way, a lot of things can happen.
And then you end up on a podcast talking about it.
Correct. Which, who knew?
I didn't even know what the future holds.
But yes, that's right.
Okay. So you got your break and you joined the firm. What was that like
The first few months took an adjustment because I really had to learn how to craft a pitch, learn my skills. The first time I pitched a reporter, I sounded like a telemarketer with a script. Would you be interested in this client? And I really, it just took a few months to click. And then I have to say, it became seamless and very fun very quickly. Richard Dukas, my partner and the CEO of our firm, he mentored me. I had other wonderful mentors, and I just fell into the news cycle because I understood it as a journalist. And I also loved, and still do, I love working with clients. I enjoy the process. It's fun to do messaging. It's fun to do media coaching. And it's fun to take a story that people don't know and to make that story much broader known. For me, it became, yes, it's work, but it became a lot of fun. And I still use that word. If you love what you do, it is amazing how you can really start to accomplish a lot.
Definitely. So we've gone through your background. We know how you got here. Now let's talk about your current role a little bit. Obviously, you work with so many different types of people, clients, and real estate. I'm curious to know, do you have a favorite client type to work with?
Yes. The best client is the client who is engaged, who understands and respects your process as a public relations professional and has good data or good analysis to share with reporters and is available. My father taught me a long time ago the concept of the three A's, and they are availability, ability, and affability. And if you have those components, you can have a successful PR campaign as well. So if somebody is engaged, if they've got good information and they also make themselves available, that is often the secret of success behind certainly business, but also certainly a good public relations campaign. You have to have good insights, you have to match the news cycle, and you have to be around. And if a client matches those characteristics, that's already a good start for us, a strong start.
I'm going to assume that not all of your clients are like this. How do you decipher between a real estate client that's going to be maybe easy to work with versus one that might need some extra tender love and care?
Well, real estate particularly has components that can be complicated. So we have worked with developers and investors in the real estate space over the years, and the best clients are the ones who understand that they will have challenges that they need to meet. And that may be that their strategy isn't relevant at the time. It may be that they have to deal with a negative news cycle and they have to be prepared for that. And they need to be very responsive. So when you have a client who is not responsive or thinks that their story is the best story ever, despite what's going on in the news, that becomes challenging.
Absolutely. And how do you go about working with these real estate clients where they might have something challenging that you need to work through? Is it about, you know, creating synergy? Is it more communication? How do you find a level to work with them on?
Well, it's synergy and communication for sure. So in my current role, I'm fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with the C-suite. So I'm often dealing with CEOs, managing partners, founders, entrepreneurs, et cetera. So if there's a good synergy between what I'm doing and our team is doing and those owners, operators, et cetera, that leads to a better campaign because everybody's bought in. Mm-hmm. And what you tend to find in real estate, which you know from your many interviews, is you're dealing with people who build businesses from the ground up and they take a lot of pride and love in what they do. So if you're connecting and they understand that you're trying to help them tell their story, that automatically creates a much better platform. However, the love and care that some in real estate have for their organizations doesn't always match the news cycle, to my comment earlier. So for example, if you think that you've got the most amazing property or the most amazing investment strategy in a particular sector of real estate, and it isn't matching what's happening from a news perspective or a data perspective, you have to be understanding of that. You can have long-term conviction in what you're doing, but you have to understand that a reporter is not just going to say what you're doing is amazing, and you have to work around that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, real estate is definitely, in some ways, a business of love. So with so many varying client types, some in real estate, some not, what are some of your key strategies that you like to deploy no matter what?
Well, the foundation for any public relations or communications program is media coaching and messaging. And if you can't answer your reporter's questions crisply, if you can't speak to a message in a very succinct fashion, that's a zero-sum game or a not particularly winning strategy. You have to be able to articulate your story quickly, and a discipline to media coaching and messaging is key. So sometimes people go into an interview and they think, I'm just going to talk about what's important to me. They're not thinking about what's important to the journalist. And it's very important to have that understanding that reporters are there to cover what is important to their listeners or readers or viewers. It's obviously not a advertising tool. And you have to be able to have the ability to answer reporters' questions while, yes, getting in your points, but you have to be able to be adept at an interview. So for us, the media coaching and the messaging is a critical underpinning of any campaign. It really, if you have those components, plus you have an assertive team, i.e. a team hopefully like ours, that's matching the news cycle and working to bring good stories to reporters, that again is a winning combination. But if you don't have the media coaching and messaging and an effective spokesperson, it's going to be much more difficult to be successful.
So one of those key strategies, it looks like, is just getting people to be able to talk well, no matter what they're talking about. But obviously you want them to, you know, speak to a trend and provide valuable information, like you were just noting. How do you encourage this in your clients?
Well, we tell people that it's important to be a good consumer of news. And we sometimes work with very smart, very successful individuals who really, they can talk about their firms very well, but they're not used to actually staying on top of the news. Now, you could say, well, that's our job, and it is our job. But if you're a spokesperson, you've got to be able to explain how the interest rate environment is affecting what you're doing, how trends in housing might be countercyclical to what you're doing. You have to be able to be a good consumer of news. And our team will send articles, will send information that will help inform an interview. But as a spokesperson, you have to be able to just consume what's going on and be versatile, because any interview can bring up any topic at any time, and you have to be prepared for that. Even if you're not going to answer the question or it's not something in your wheelhouse, you have to be as much of a 30,000-foot view person as possible when it comes to news and headlines.
I see. So very much about thought leadership.
Yes, you said it better than I. Thought leadership is key. You have to be a thought leader if you're going to help lead an organization. People are expecting it of you. So if you're a private equity real estate head, people want to know what you think about everything from the current housing market to the future of office and commercial real estate. They want to know what you think about the legislative cycle, how the tax season might affect owners and operators. You need to know a little bit about everything, at least, because it's expected of you. You're a leader in the space and you have more of a view than most people do. By the way, you know, there's another point about thinking as a thought leader, and it is important to actually have thoughts as a thought leader. It's not just knowing about your space. It's also knowing about the world broadly, even beyond the headlines, in terms of entertainment, sports, literature. And I've talked and written about this before. If you're a thought leader, you want to bring in your different perspectives from all walks of life. I recently gave a speech, for example, and I talked about buying cereal at the supermarket. And it was interesting how people just glommed on to that concept, because it's relatable. We all do that, right? We all go to the supermarket, even in an age of, you know, home delivery, and you know, you buy cereal. It's just something that we all do. And I think to inspire people and to get people to connect with what you're doing, you need to know a little bit about everything. That's why sports analogies work so well, or quoting books or films. These are ways to connect all the dots. So my advice for anybody who's listening and saying, how can I be a more versatile thought leader? I would say read as much as you can, watch as much as you can, and don't just consume for the purposes of entertainment. Think about what you're watching and how that might affect the way that you think about something. So for example, you're sitting on a plane, you're heading to a meeting, and you're watching a movie. Think about how that movie might have a lesson that you can impart later to somebody else. And that's where thought leadership is fun, but I would also say effective. You have to connect with people constantly. The same thing is true, by the way, in thinking about the news cycle from a transparency perspective. Watch how other leaders admit their mistakes, watch how others communicate information that isn't always good. That can help you later when you're in a situation where you have to communicate information that you'd rather not, but you need to. I've quoted this before, but I think it's important. Again, Nora Ephron used to say, everything is copy. And I really do think that's true for what thought leaders should be thinking about today.
That concept of transparency, I think, is so interesting for you to bring up. I know that, of course, your roles are to have transparency and open communication with your clients, but also to have them be able to have that with the media. So could you elaborate a little bit on why transparency is so important for you to have in your interpersonal relationships with these clients?
Absolutely. So transparency has a couple of definitions. First, there's the transparency with the public. We're of the belief, and I think any good PR firm would be, you get out with the bad news, you admit the mistake, you address what's going on, and you deal with it, and you're upfront about it. And you talk to reporters in a very symbiotic and open fashion, and you show what you're doing to mitigate the problem. That's the transparency in terms of the media. But the transparency also has to come with the PR agency and the communications officials behind the scenes. If you're a client and you're not sharing with us the real story, that's only going to limit the efficacy of what we do. And for us, transparency with a client is paramount. If you're not telling us the truth, then you're not being a good client, quite frankly, and that's not a relationship that is one of partnership. You have to be able to say, here's what's going on, here's what we need to do, and that way we can be helpful in sharing that story, even when the story is not one that you want to share. Transparency is key. And as we've seen time and time again, when organizations are not accountable with reporters, that doesn't serve anybody well. It doesn't serve the public well. And ultimately, it's a failed strategy. So it has to be the opposite of that. Transparency is paramount.
I know that one of the things that you do with your clients that obviously centers around this idea of transparency is crisis prep and building out a crisis response team in case there's something that you need to be transparent with the news about that maybe isn't the best. So how do you go about building that crisis response team? What does that really look like?
Preparing for a crisis really means being anticipatory. You want to be able to prepare for something before it ever happens, if it ever happens at all. So the best clients will say, you know, we just want to be prepared if there's ever a natural disaster, if there's a cybersecurity breach, if there's employee malfeasance. And these things may never happen, but we want to have a plan in place so that we can deal with it right away. And quite frankly, if you've got statements on the shelf, if you've got a media action plan where you know which reporters to go to and how you would react if something highly significant happened, that can help you so much later rather than scrambling at the last minute. So crisis planning is not just responding to the crisis of the day. It's thinking about what vulnerabilities might take place in the future, even if it's a low percentage chance of those vulnerabilities happening, and making sure that you've set something in place so that you don't have to just immediately scramble. I think that's a really key tenet. And as we know in real estate, crises do happen. You can be the best property owner and manager in the world, but if there's something structurally that, heaven forbid, happens to a building, far better to have a plan in place to know how you would respond before that actually happens.
Definitely makes sense. And I'm glad that you brought up real estate clients then, because I actually wanted to go back a little bit, if that's okay, and ask about, earlier you mentioned some of your favorite clients to work with and also some of your least favorite. Curious to know the differences that you see when it comes to working with multifamily real estate clients versus perhaps another type of real estate client, if there are any.
I would say that in multifamily situations, you can be dealing with organizations that have evolved over time and got larger. And what that means is you've got somebody who's got a very entrepreneurial spirit. They started the firm maybe, or their relatives did even, with just a couple of people or one person. And then they became corporations. So sometimes there's very much a mentality of you want to control everything. You want to do it your way. And I totally get that. I understand that. But as a larger organization, And frankly, as any organization today, you have to be accountable and you have to make sure that, again, you're not just talking about why what you do is terrific. You have to be able to understand that it may not be relevant to reporters. And in fact, what you do may not even be appealing to reporters, and you may be the subject of negative inquiries, and you have to have that mindset. We live in a world today, as you know, where there's a view that, oh, media, you know, they're out to get everybody, et cetera. And no matter where you sit politically, I think that's a common view. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that reporters have a job to do, and you have to be accountable and responsive. And organizations need to know that. And I think sometimes when you've built something literally with your hands, there's the feeling of, why do I need to talk to a reporter? They're just out to get me. But reporters aren't out to get you. They're there to cover what's newsworthy. And that understanding needs to be there.
And what about in terms of maybe the physical campaigns between multifamily clients versus other real estate clients? Are there any different tactics or strategies that you might deploy?
I would say generally what's happening, and this is not just true in real estate, but I think across the board, but I think it's relevant to real estate, is content is king, and created content is even more precisely the term. There are today numerous outlets, numerous social platforms, and having analysis and data and thought leadership that comes from within, a good LinkedIn post, that's very much the part of a strategic marketing platform. And I will tell you that in our agency, we have really committed to content creation. We now have 3 full-time people in an agency of about 30 people who are doing content regularly, and they each and every day are thinking about content and how do we leverage it via social platforms, as well as op-eds, placements, podcasts. It's very important to generate your own content, because the traditional news outlets will not always be interested in what you have to say. Nonetheless, as a real estate organization, you have to market and you have to have content that people will read, and they will read it if it's relevant and not just sales oriented. But self-generated content is increasingly important. So I think for those who have ignored writing good LinkedIn posts, doing social media, podcasts, they need to pay more attention to it and in many instances commit to it.
And for, say, a multifamily real estate client creating content, what does good content look like? What does that mean?
Relevant to the news. If I own a multifamily property and all I do is talk about why that property is great or why our properties are great, that's going to have a very narrow audience. Now, it's important to talk about your developments and your enhancements and your transactions, but you have to, again, give a perspective. So if I own, let's say, property in a particular municipality, it's important for me to weigh in on community trends, how we're helping the community. And by the way, we didn't even talk about charitable giving and philanthropy. That's another aspect to this. Being involved in the community and demonstrating how you're involved in the community is important too. But it is about thought leadership. So for example, I think with the, you know, with all the data out there today, for example, the statistics from the federal government and talking about interest rates and home sales, you as the head of an organization or as a key person in the organization, you can talk about those statistics and explain how they're affecting your strategy, what that means for your clients, for owners, operators, but you have to be able to be conversant in a way that will draw the person in. There's so much media coming at us that if we only talk our respective books, people will lose patience very quickly. By the way, I hope I'm following my own advice in talking to you today.
I think you are, absolutely. And last question for you here. What are your real estate clients looking for right now? What are they seeking from their industry partners?
Validation. People forget that public relations is not just about getting out the deal or the announcement or telling people about what's going on organizationally. It's also about validation for a firm and its level of credibility, and also the level of credibility, particularly of the founder, owner, or CEO. It's sometimes an unspoken rule, but I really do think that if you meet a managing partner or CEO who's been doing this a long time, she or he wants to be known in the industry as somebody who's innovative, has intellectual capital, and is a really good deal maker. And that mindset is very present in a lot of what we do. And we didn't really talk about this earlier, but I think people are looking for meaning, and they're also looking for a way to capture how they do what they do and to bring a greater purpose to it. It's not always said that way, but I do think that people are really saying, you know, I want exposure, not just for financial reasons, that's a huge part of it, but also just to show that I've done something, that I've done something of worth. And I think that's why, even though we've seen a consolidation in traditional media, there's been a proliferation of social platforms and content creation because people want to have a voice. And that doesn't mean that your average CEO is going out and tweeting about their views on every subject, but they want recognition. They've worked hard and they want to feel that somebody's paying attention. And I understand that mindset. And I think most people do.
Absolutely. Makes a ton of sense. Thank you so much for joining me here today, Seth. I really appreciate it. And I loved having your insights.
It was a pleasure. And thank you for the time.
Of course. And before I let you go, MHN wants to invite you to join the Executive Council. We would love to feature your insights monthly. To join, please email jessica.fiur@cpe-mhn.com. Further, be sure to find MHN on all of your socials. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing you next month for Top Marketers.